control the Firebirds?
Leaning past the guards, Griffin whispered something into his ear, and Kinnison went pale. Did you really think I never followed you? Or listened at a keyhole? The rockets will obey my commands. I am in absolute control.
There's still Lieutenant Brandon, sir. He's got a dozen PDs. Could be trouble. The ass is actually loyal to this blubbering thing.
Brandon is dead. That healer Glassman is in charge of those boats, spreading the word about the Outlanders. If Captain Glassman tries anything, we nail his family to the front wall until he surrenders. Then we blow him out of the water with my Firebirds. Kinnison narrowed his piggy eyes and said nothing. For once he was thankful for the bandages that masked his features.
What about the Outlanders? I heard they took Cold Harborville in less than a day.
Send the word. Shield them on sight.
Yes, my lord.
Exhaling loudly through his nose, a guard moved his head away from the huge prisoner.
Shit fire, this diseased pus bag stinks something awful.
The other guards muttered in agreement. They had never been this close to the former Baron before, and were beginning to understand why dogs wouldn't go near him, and his bed partners got drunk before and after sex. He reeked worse than a dead seal on a hot beach. Baron Griffin sniffed the air and made a face.
Nuke me, he is pungent.
Well, he'll smell a lot worse when I'm done with him. Sergeant, have your men haul his wretched ass to the dungeon. I have something very special planned for our former lord and master.
Yes, sir.
Dragging Kinnison into motion, the Sekhmen kicked and shoved the fat man along the stony corridors of the mansion and down into the cellar. When Kinnison heard the telltale booming of the heavy door closing, he knew that there was every possibility that he would never leave the dungeon alive. A flare of pride overtook him, and he found the notion intolerable that the hideous tortures he did so often to others would now be done to him. Kinnison decided to try for a clean death. When the guards cut off the rope to shackle him to the wall, he'd grab a blaster and start shooting. They would be forced to chill him then, and he would be spared the humiliation of being taken apart under the sharp knives and red-hot tongs of his enemies. But the Sekhmen seemed to have expected that move on his part, because they shackled him first, and then cut away the ropes. Dangling helpless from the iron cuffs attached to the ceiling, Kinnison stood before the jeering men, utterly helpless. They could do as they pleased with him now, and there was no way he could stop them. He was already dead. If he had a single minute alone, he might have a fleeting chance of escape, but that would never happen. Griffin was proving himself worthy to be a Baron in every way. A guard poked at the man with the tip of his knife.
Let's carve him up a little first, then maybe set him on fire.
Cut off his fingers. Feed him to the dogs.
Don't be ridiculous.
Griffin tested the anchor bolt that held the chains. It was good and solid.
His heir is dead. His reign is over. Let him live out the rest of his miserable life down here in the cold and wet. The sickness will eat him alive, and without his drugs or shine, it'll be a much more painful death than anything we could do to him.
Dribbling blood and pus from tied hands, Kinnison heaved for breath and remained quiet. That wasn't the reaction he wanted, so Baron Griffin took a bottle from a nearby table, grabbed Kinnison by the chin, and forced him to look upward.
Live forever.
Griffin pulled the cork with his teeth and poured the contents over the man, front and back. Kinnison had only a moment to wonder what was happening before he smelled the strong aroma of alcohol. He watched in horror as the clear liquid seeped through his bandages and reached the open sores covering his skin. The screams exploded from him as searing pain burned into his flesh, his anguished cries almost drowning out the laughter of his captors. The agony seemed to last for years as he was doused with more shine, and then again, until he was finally swallowed whole by sweet blackness. As the train of horses plodded along the mountainous trail, Ryan fought off a shiver, his coat offering little protection against the strong winds. There had been enough horses for everybody, more in fact, but only saddles for about half, and no supplies. Most of the freed Sekhmen were in thin clothing. As the group climbed into the hills and the temperature quickly dropped, Christie had gotten the horse blankets from under the saddles and cut holes in the centers to make crude ponchos for the cold men. It helped, but not much. The horses were unhappy, but they didn't have a vote in the matter. Good thing the companions were wearing jackets, although only Christie was actually warm in her bearskin coat. And those fingerless gloves JB wore were a godsend. Ryan's own coat was too thin to be much protection against the bitter winds of the higher peaks, but it was a hell of a lot better than those ponchos. Mildred had loaned Anne some of her spare clothing, but the thin girl still looked pale and weak. Ryan wasn't sure she could last much longer without a hot meal. The cholera had taken a lot out of her, and everybody was hungry. The Cannies hadn't fed their prisoners since they had planned on eating them, and while the companions had lots of MRE food packs, they hesitated to display the pre-dark wealth of the foil envelopes. Ryan had convinced Mitchum that the companions found their rapid fires and revolvers in the Canny armory. The lie was accepted at face value, but if they started showing MRE packs, flashlights, rad counters, and such, the only possible conclusion would be that they were outlanders, and strangers got aced in these islands by order of the Lord Baron. With a week's worth of food in their backpacks, the companions rode along with Mitchum and his troops, stomachs growling, and watching the landscape for anything they could shoot for dinner, then breakfast, and now lunch. Thankfully, there was lots of grass for the horses to munch on the lower hills, and plenty of snow for water. Filling a canteen only gave a few cupfuls after it melted from body heat, but it tasted pure and clean.
Feel much farther?
The albino teenager had one hand stuffed into a pocket, the other holding the reins, and he switched them often. He couldn't understand how it could be so damn cold in the tropics. But then he'd seen a swamp turn into a desert in under a year in the Deathlands. Bastard weather was screwy across the globe.
Maybe by tomorrow morning, we'll see Rottokville.
Colonel Mitchum tightened the belt strapped around his poncho. The wind kicked up tiny blizzards of snow and constantly dusted them with flakes. The officer filled his mind with memories of warm days on the beach and savored what little heat came from the animal he rode. Doc buttoned his frock coat to the collar.
This reminds me of those carefree days in Moscow. We were with a colonel then, too. Nasty fellow at first, but he turned out a decent enough chap.
A Sekhman hunched under his dirty blanket, his breath fogged in the air, often hiding his unshaved face.
Moscow? So where's that?
It's an island to the south of here. Little place, lots of wolves.
Folks nice?
Baron was tough, but excellent shine.
Good enough.
Anne tried to laugh, but the sound died away in the cold breeze moaning around the craggy peaks and bare outcroppings.
What? What the hell?
Dean slowed his mount and stared off to the side. There was a tiny cloud that appeared and disappeared near one of the snowbanks. Breathing out of the side of his mouth to see better, the boy suddenly realized the odd cloud was exactly like breath, foggy from the cold. He drew his Browning semi-automatic pistol and jacked the slide. Could be another buried cold heart, like back in the Canny camp. Should he warn the others quietly, or attack? The decision was taken away when the snowbank charged at the group with only the soft crunching of the new-fallen snow under its soft paws.
Beauty!
Dean fired, both rounds missing. Hot pipe, that sucker was fast. The rest of the mixed group spun as the snowbank leapt on Anne, the blow shoving her off her horse. The girl hit the ground, rolling with the thing, blood spurting from deep gashes in her chest. Instantly, everybody had their blasters out, but withheld firing. The girl and Mutie were so entangled, it would be impossible to shoot one without hitting the other.
Shoot it!
Anne screamed, beating at the snowy white creature with both fists. Her blanket was ripped, taking most of her clothing with it, and she pulled the big flintlock from her belt and fired. The discharge cloud masked the two until the wind pushed it away. Shapeless white covered her neck for a moment, then went away, and blood fountained into the air from severed arteries as her throat was neatly removed. She gurgled horribly, her hands at the ragged flesh of her neck. Then the snow mutie moved to her belly, and once more hot blood spewed.
Hands dead. Chill the fucker!
Ryan leveled the stire and fired. The round missed striking the dying girl, and only startled the creature. As the companions fired a barrage of lead, The creature turned toward them, and Ryan could only see a vague outline of a bestial face under the blood. The rest was only shapeless white. Good enough. Working the bolt, he aimed between the eyes and pulled the trigger. The mutie flipped over sideways and hit the snow. Green